Wednesday, the 3rd of September, 19th of Parliament, suspension of standing orders, the Honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I beg to move under Standing Order 7.3 to suspend Standing Order 7.1 in order to proceed with a government statement.
Those in favour? Those against? Carried. Government statement, the Honourable Minister for Housing and Equality.
Mr. Speaker, thank you for the opportunity to make a statement today about my intention to put to the Select Committee on Parliamentary Reform that it consider the implementation of a written regime governing parental leave and particularly maternity leave for parliamentarians. I am doing so not only as Minister for Equality, but I am sure that it is not lost on anyone that I am the only woman in government. And I am one of only two women MPs who have sat in the lifetime of this Parliament. There has never been more than two women in this House, and at times there have been less. Mr. Speaker, the gender imbalance of this House is historic and striking, particularly in this day and age. At the last general election, just 3 of 20 candidates were women. Mr. Speaker, women make up roughly 50% of the electorate, but under 12% of this Parliament represents them. It is incumbent upon all of us to identify the barriers to women's participation in active politics and to work to mitigate them. Each of us in this House is acutely aware of its demands, and this applies to all of us. Ours is a job where we are never off. We are holders of public office, and it is our job and privilege to work to represent those who elect us. Under this government, Parliament now meets more often than at any time in the world's history. Our monthly meetings require us to be present and discuss and vote on bills, ask and answer questions, and deal with any other business of the House, excepting though, of course, need for illness and work-related travel, and we are held to account on our attendance, both by each other and by the electorate. So imagine the difficulty, Mr. Speaker, for women needing an extended amount of time off. As we're aware since my announcement in this year's budget session, I'm currently undertaking a review of the provisions of maternity leave which already exist to consider how best to introduce provisions for paternity and parental leave. The law currently allows for 14 weeks maternity leave. During this period, Parliament may meet up to 4 times. There are currently no provisions catering for women parliamentarians who might want to have a child during the lifetime of a parliament. Indeed, there are no formal arrangements for men either. The latter, however, does not seem to have been a deterrent. Those elected to represent voters should have all the structural support in place to enable them to do so. The aim of considering formal arrangements for maternity leave and indeed parental leave for parliamentarians is to remove the barriers to effective representation and to encourage women to run for office in the first place. Structured provisions that remove the barriers for active parliamentary participation by new mothers will set an important example to the wider society which it represents, that being a parent should not be a barrier to workplace equality. Without a written regime governing maternity leave for parliamentarians, the inequalities in representation will continue to exist. We are currently in the process of considering parliamentary reform, and we must take this opportunity to address Parliament's gender imbalance and remove the systemic barriers to the equal representation of half the community which we represent. Gibraltar needs structural provisions for voting and dealing with parliamentary questions that is not an object which is not adult with family life. That is why, Mr. Speaker, I have today written to the Clerk of the House requesting that the Select Committee on Parliamentary Reform consider such formal arrangements for maternity leave. This has never been an issue before. We have had very few women in Parliament, Mr. Speaker, and none have had children while in Parliament. There is no precedent and no one to look up to. But that, Mr. Speaker, is not the case. There will come the time when this will be necessary, and at that point, we should not have to scramble to make arrangements. Indeed, the objective is knowing that such arrangements would be in place, and hopefully, this would attract more women and younger women to our House, so it would help diversify in terms of gender and age demographics. we should welcome the removal of barriers that are currently preventing women from considering standing for these seats, Mr. Speaker. Thank you very much for this opportunity of making this statement of my intention to the House.
The Honourable Member of the Opposition.
Mr. Speaker, we welcome the statement by the Minister insofar as she wishes to put before the Select Committee on Parliamentary Reform the implementation of paternity and parental leave for parliamentarians. This is absolutely right that this House should reflect generally the community within which we live. And it is right, of course, that more women should participate in this House. And to do that, of course, we should support the proposal put by the Minister that we should remove barriers to entry into this place, Mr. Speaker. And the Minister rightly observed that only three in the last number of elections have been women that have participated in elections. I note the reflection of what the law currently stands. There is, of course, parental leave per se in relation to the employer-employer relationship. We do not, as parliamentarians, enjoy the luxury of being described as employees or employers, and therefore it's quite right that this proposition be put before the Select Committee, as it is a complex issue, and it needs to be determined by the Select Committee insofar as putting it before the House. One of the issues, of course, is that this House has only met once in relation to, the Select Committee has only met once in relation to parliamentary reform. Of course, we should improve that so that we can meet more often to discuss those issues. And likewise, I have to rise to the bait, of course, insofar as regular meetings of this House. Of course, there have been infrequent question times of the Chief Minister and other ministers on that side of the House, and that should, of course, improve. We've been very critical. But I don't say much more of that. I'm sure there'll be some response in relation to that point. But we wholeheartedly welcome the Minister's statement on improving the quality of our democracy, improving the participation from members of our community, and the diversity to which we speak to.
Mr. Speaker, from my part, I would like to thank my good friend, the Honourable Lady, the Minister for Equality, for her wise and equality-driven stance on the matter of placing on the agenda for the next parliamentary term in the Parliamentary Reform Select Committee the issue of creating a regime and framework vis-à-vis paternity and maternity leave for future parliamentarians. Mr. Speaker, it is, of course, crucial and vital to establish protocols in order to protect future parliamentarians and their seats in circumstances whereby they may not be able to be present in the House for maternity or paternity reasons. Mr. Speaker, the famous case relatively recently of Labour MP Philippe Sadiq, who was forced to postpone her C-section to vote against Theresa May's Brexit deal, is just one case in point here, which highlights the need to have these frameworks in order. Mr. Speaker, Sadiq famously said, well, the battle to bring Parliament into the 21st century is far from won. And of course, we ourselves need to deal with this battle of our own right here, right now, especially if what we want is to make this Parliament truly representative, break the gender imbalance, and make it inviting to both men and women in the future. Mr. Speaker, I myself have 5 women, including myself, in my own slate for the forthcoming election, a couple of which are still in their childbearing years. And it is duly welcome to hear that pathways, in order to reflect their circumstances, as well as that of men who may require paternity time, will be well thought out and prepared for. However, Mr. Speaker, I take this opportunity to urge all parties fighting the next election to include equalising statutory maternity and paternity leave, as we will be doing. Because if we truly want to call ourselves a progressive, egalitarian society, Mr. Speaker, if we don't, these frameworks that the Honourable Lady talks of implementing within parliamentary committee discussions next term, they will reek of privilege and double standards. Where on one hand, we quite rightly protect and modernise leave for our parliamentarians, but on the other hand, we don't for our society in general. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
I want, as Leader of the House, to welcome the statement by the Honourable Lady. I, of course, must answer the statement by the Honourable Gentleman, but they've been very critical of the absence of meetings. The question is, well, there haven't been, Mr. Speaker, for the simple reason that they know that that there haven't been more meetings for questions because of the extraordinary events being played out outside of Gibraltar. But indeed, if they had been critical, they would have also been extraordinarily hypocritical because there have been as many meetings for questions this year as there were in the last year that they were in government. Mr. Speaker, the point which I think is an important point is that as we move towards ensuring gender balance, we must ensure that we have done everything structurally that we are able to do to deliver gender balance. One of the things that we tried to do when we were first elected was to ensure that honourable members who needed a timetable of understanding of when things were going to happen in order to be able to plan matters relating to their parental responsibilities have that. I think in the last year that has also fallen into the speech as a result of the huge difficulties that we're facing internationally. But anything that we can do to support the structure of Parliament in a way that can ensure that the gender balance does not arise out of any failure of the structure of this race, we will be entirely supportive of it.
The Honourable the Chief Minister. The Honourable Samantha Sacramento.
Mr. Speaker, I'm glad to hear the positive response from the other side. Clearly, there is a recognition among all of us that this is something that needs to be done, and I'm sure that it will not be a battle between us to bring this out into the 21st century. Mr. Speaker, the response from the other side of the House has been extremely positive, and there is very little that I need to say in reply other than reply to the final remark made by the Honourable Lady on the other side in relation to a suggestion that there would be double standards if we were to implement this for Parliament and not for the rest of the world. And I think that is absolutely not the case. Perhaps the Honourable Lady has misunderstood the position, but I will lean on maternity leave already as this in law. As the Honourable Gentleman, the Leader of the Opposition, explained, the law in relation to our parliamentarians is slightly different, but it does not mean that we will find ourselves in a situation that is better than the rest of the community. It is just different, Mr. Speaker, because what we're talking about is a regime which will ensure that women will be able to participate fairly in this house. And on that note, in relation to maternity leave and paternity being extended to consider paternity leave and parental leave, and one of the ladies in Parliament that this will include a woman of justice, Mr. Speaker, I must say that this is something, as you know from my statement in my budget address, that the government has already looked at, is already working on, and is already at an advanced stage so that it can become believed. Thank you.
So the committee might also keep in mind the need to somehow within the position for Parliament to make arrangements for babies to be made. None of the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I don't move on the standing order 73 to suspend standing order 71 in order to proceed with government bills.
No, in favor. Those against. Carried. Bill, policy second reading. A bill plan to amend the Countries Act 2014, the Honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, the honour to move the Bill Plan Act to amend the Companies Act 2014 be read a first time.
And I put the question, which is that a Bill Plan Act to amend the Companies Act 2014 be read a first time. Those in favour? Those against? Carried. The Companies Amendment Act 2019.
Speaker, the Companies Amendment Bill 2019 is a short but important bill that amends Parts 12, 14, 15, and 16, and Schedule 26 of the Companies Act 2014. Speaker, I'm dealing with this matter, which is usually something that will be dealt with by the Minister for Financial Services, as Minister Isola is away again in China promoting to both the place to do business come Brexit or high water. The bill amends the Act by extending the current provisions relating to the registration as a branch or establishment of a place of business in Gibraltar by overseas companies the other types of overseas entities having a legal personality, that is to say, entities other than companies. The particular provisions of the Act regarding the registration of branches and the establishment of a place of business have been part of Gibraltar law since at least the late 1990s, and have served Gibraltar well as mechanisms through which overseas companies may establish a presence in Gibraltar without having to set up new entities in Gibraltar. These provisions now need to evolve and be modernized to take account of the increased use in global corporate structuring of different types of corporate entities which are not companies but have an independent legal personality. Limited partnerships and limited liability partnerships being the most obvious examples. Mr. Speaker, government has received representations from firms that extending the provisions of the Act to these other types of corporate entities will provide flexibility and open up new structuring opportunities. These are considered particularly helpful in the context of Brexit, where firms are restructuring to enable themselves to continue operating in the EU from other jurisdictions, but maintaining a real presence in Gibraltar, serving non-EU markets and the Gibraltar branch. Honourable members will therefore understand the importance of this bill becoming an act of this time. The bill therefore amends parts 12, 14, 15, and 16 of the Act by substituting references to company and companies with references to body corporate and body corporate respectively. A body corporate will mean any entity having a legal personality. Mr. Speaker, it is considered that these new terms will be wide enough to allow any type of corporate entity, including companies, to avail itself of the provisions of the Act regarding the registration of a branch or the establishment of a place of business in Gibraltar. Consequential amendments are made by the bill relating to the particulars to be filed at Company House, particularly by extending the references to directors to offices of the body corporate, of the body corporate equivalent to the directors of the company, and further amendments are made to Schedule 26 of the Act regarding the delivery of reports and accounts. Finally, Mr. Speaker, the bill corrects the definition of fourth council directors to Directive 2013/34/EU, which is a reference to Directive 2013/34/EU of the European Parliament and of the Council of the 26th of June 2015. Mr. Speaker, I commend the bill.
All right, but the question is on the honourable member, which is Stephen Jones, and it was amended to the bill. The honourable the leader of the opposition.
Mr. Speaker, we thank the Speaker, and we will be supporting this bill. Of course, it should be reminded that we, in times of Brexit, we of course have to be flexible in our response to business to allow for further restructuring opportunities to continue. And I'm glad to see that the government has listened to business, and it is encouraging to see that we've now introducing this law to allow for further restructuring opportunities for our businesses.
Honourable member, would you speak on the conclusion of the bill? I'll now put the question, which is that a bill for an Act to amend the Companies Act 2014 be read a second time. Those in favour? Those against? Carried. The Companies Act 2019.
I would like to move for the committee stage to be taken later today by one of the members.
The one of the members agree that the committee stage and first reading of the bill be taken today. A bill for an act to provide for the application of certain EU third country agreements and UK third country agreements after Gibraltar's exit from the European Union, or whether in an agreement under Article 52 of the Treaty on the European Union at the end of any conditional stroke implementation period. The Honourable the Deputy Chief Minister. I have the honour to move that a bill for an act to provide for the application of certain EU third country agreements and UK third country agreements after the voter's exit from the European Union, or whether there is an agreement under Article 52 of the Treaty on the European Union at the end of any conditional implementation period, be read a first time. I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to provide for the application of certain EU third country arrangements and UK third country arrangements after the vote of exit from the European Union, or where there is an agreement under Article 52 of the Treaty on the European Union, at the end of any conditional implementation period, be read a first time. Those Agenda. Once again, carried. The European Union withdrawal application of international agreements, 2019. I'd like to move that the bill be now read a second time. The speaker, the bill before the House today is a continuity measure in the face of an Asian Brexit. Members know that there is now a strong likelihood that the United Kingdom and Gibraltar may exit the European Union on the 31st of October without a withdrawal agreement. Having said that, the United Kingdom government has said that they continue to work towards a deal. Nonetheless, the political background in London is as fluid as ever. Members will be aware of the move towards the parliamentary imposed delay to our EU departure. They will also have heard the Prime Minister's address outside Downing Street, where he countered those moves as a possible general election. Speaker, we need to be prepared. That is why the bill is before us today. We have to be aware that over the years, the EU has entered into a number of agreements with third countries, being countries outside the European Union. In particular, those agreements have covered areas where the member states have ceded their competence to the European Union. Such agreements apply to the voter by virtue of a membership of the EU, and will therefore cease to apply as from exit date. This bill makes provision for the application of certain of those international agreements. Those that prior to leaving the European Union already applied to Gibraltar, and which the United Kingdom has, or is in the process of replacing with a new agreement. As I will set out below, by including the replacement agreements in the schedule, such agreements will have a force of law in Gibraltar. This is now turn to the specifics of the bill. Clause 1 provides for the commencement of the act to be by notice in the Gazette. The intention of the government, however, is for the act to commence on exit day. Clause 2 provides definitions. I've given notice to Mr. Speaker that I will be moving an amendment here at committee place. This is in order to insert a further definition, where the definition of international agreement is broad enough to encompass non-binding arrangements, which may be necessary to bridge the gap that may occur in cases where an EU agreement will cease to apply before the new agreement is fully enforced. Clause 3, 1 and 2 together provide that international agreements that are contained in the schedule constitute the law of the vote. This may be applied directly to the same extent as such agreements applied to the vote before the relevant day. This includes multilateral agreements that remain in force and continue to apply to Gibraltar as a result of the United Kingdom becoming a party in its own right and extending those to us. Mr. Speaker, that clause provides an important clarification. This shows that the reference in such clause 1 to agreements being applied to the same extent as EU third country agreements applied to Gibraltar is to be interpreted as meaning that the scope of such international agreements is the same provided for by the EU treaties and EU law as it applies to Gibraltar before exit day. Therefore, an agreement will not fall outside the scope of that clause 1 merely because of the successor agreement is not cast in identical terms to the agreement that it replaces or may replace. That clause 4 clarifies what is meant by provisionally applied in that clause 1. That clause 5 confers the power on the Chief Minister to amend the schedule by order, and Chapter 6 requires that any such order be laid before Parliament after it has been made. Mr. Speaker, the schedule presently reflects the state of play as at the date of publication of the bill. Since then, and more particularly when exit day arrives, more agreements will be filed, and therefore the envisage an order will be published around exit day itself, and any further updates at suitable junctures thereafter. The Speaker has also given notice of a small amendment to Clause 3.1, consequent on the insertion of the new definition in Clause 2. Clause 4 requires a court tribunal to read any provision of Gibraltar law in a manner that is compatible with an international agreement that is listed in the schedule. Where it is not possible to do so, it requires that the terms of the international agreement take precedence over any law enacted before the relevant day. Clause 5 confers a regulation making power on the Chief Minister. the time of the exercise in connection with an obligation arising from a scheduled international agreement. Mr. Speaker, as I said earlier, this bill arises from our departure from the European Union for a potential departure on the 31st of October. It provides the basis for a necessary legal framework for the application of certain international agreements to the vote. Mr. Speaker, I commend the bill to the House.
In reply to the question, does any honourable member wish to speak on general principles and merits of this bill? And the honourable the leader of the opposition.
Mr. Speaker, we welcome this contingency measure and we thank the Deputy Prime Minister for his explanation. Of course, it now appears strongly likely, as he has said, that we'll be leaving the European Union without a deal, and therefore, this is a sensible and, of course, the most correct way to proceed as far as the amendment to the law is concerned. And I'm just going to
I now put the question, which is that a bill for an act to provide for the application of certain EU third country agreements and UK third country arrangements after the border exit from the European Union, or where there is an agreement under Article 50, paragraph 2, subparagraph 2 of the Treaty on the European Union, at the end of any transitional implementation period, is read a second time. Those in favour? Those against? Carried.
The European Union Withdrawal Application of International Agreements Act 2019. I'd like to notice that the committee report on third reading of the bill be taken today if all honourable members agree.
All honourable members agree that the committee report on third reading of this bill be taken today.
Committee stage in third reading.
Speaker, I have the honour to move that the House will now resolve its voting to committee to consider the following bills called by call. The Companies Amendments Act 2019, European Union Withdrawal, Application of International Agreements Act 2019.
We plan to amend the Companies Act 2014. Clauses 1 to 7. Stand part of the bill. The long title. Stand part of the bill. A bill for an act to provide for the application of certain EU third country agreements and UK third country agreements after the Gibraltar exit from the European Union, or where there is an agreement under Article 50, Chapter 2 of the Treaty of the European Union, at the end of any transitional stroke implementation period. Clause 1. Stand part of the bill. Clause 2 as amended.
The Honourable Minister has given notice, has circulated an amendment, and he tells you that the amendment is approved.
Clause 2 as amended. Stand part of the bill. Clause 3 as amended.
And there is a small amendment to this clause.
The clause to be as amended, stand part of the bill. Clause 46, stand part of the bill. The federal, stand part of the bill. The long title, stand part of the bill.
I have the honour to report that the European Union Withdrawal Application of International Agreement for 2019 and the Companies Amendment for 2019 have been considered in Commission and agreed to with some amendments, and I now move that they be read a third time and passed.
And now for the question, which is the Companies Act, the Companies Amendment Act 2019, and the European Union withdrawal application of International Amendment Act 2019 be read a third time and passed. Those in favour? Those against? Carried. First and second reading. A bill for an act to repeal certain provisions and to amend others of the Fair Trading Act 2015 relating to business licensing, in particular as regards to the dissolution of the functions of the Business Licensing Authority, to provide for the exchange of information or intelligence between the Office of Fair Trading and relevant agencies and bodies, to modify and clarify the meaning of certain items and for related purposes.
Speaker, I move that the House should now adjourn. Mr. Speaker, as I do, I'm going to move that the House should adjourn to Tuesday, the 17th of September at 3 p.m. Between now and then, we will enjoy the festivities of our National Day. So, Mr. Speaker, I think I should just give a health warning to honourable members and those who will be watching the community. But as I said when we last adjourned, given what is happening in the United Kingdom, it is not impossible that the government may need to exercise the powers set out in the standing orders and rules to recall Parliament before that day. Otherwise, I hope to see all other honourable members in the House on Tuesday the 17th at 3 p.m.
The House will now adjourn to Tuesday the 17th of September at 3 p.m.